We're ready to go.
Bring it.
All right. Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. I am not Brock Dittus. I am Aaron Flores.
And I'm Guthrie Straw, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today...
Don't read that.
And today...
from last week. And today...
We won't read anything.
Continuing to roll easy. Today we have Dan Christensen in the studio. How many times is this for you? Is this three?
I am now a three-peat.
Three-peat?
Yes.
All right.
Not so counting far, the live shows.
So far, I think everyone this month has been a veteran. Yeah.
I'm going for the ace, because I heard you get a free t-shirt and coffee mug.
Yes. Nice. Yes, exactly.
When you get there.
Is it okay if the coffee mug isn't washed yet?
I was expecting that. No, okay. I didn't think that got thrown into you were like 10 times.
It's authentic.
That's right.
Ooh, I can really taste the Brock coffee.
Oh, speaking of coffee mug, incidentally, so when I was in Mexico City, I ran into a Brompton bicycle shop in Mexico City that specialized in selling Bromptons, and got to know the owner, like met him, talked with him for a little while, kind of through my girlfriend who translated for us. But anyways, we sent him a Sprocket mug.
Nice.
Oh,
and
nice.
He just got it like last week sometime.
Beautiful.
Like, so we did the order, what, in January?
Mm-hmm.
It's a month and a half, 2 months.
That's not too bad.
Well,
yeah, I guess, like, you know.
We get spoiled here.
That's true.
You know, I'm on Amazon Prime. I'm like, if this ain't here in 72 hours, I'm leaving life and committing suicide.
We're out of here.
Prime now if it's not here in 30 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Canceling that order.
You're right. But yeah, you forget that most of the world doesn't live with Amazon Prime.
Right. Well, and you know, this is, I don't even remember who does these mugs for us now. Anyways, it's one of those where, like, you know, they just print them off when you order them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, by demand.
Yeah. Yeah, so however long it takes them to do that, and then, you know, of course, shipping to Mexico City.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Could you tell if it got held up in customs or did it go right
no
there?
No idea. Okay. I know, like, just he Facebooked the post.
That's awesome.
I could just see that for all the illegal things going across the border. It's like, these mugs aren't leaving our desk
till
we're sure they're legitimate.
Yeah.
These mugs go nowhere.
Hey, well, I didn't mention, well, you mentioned in the opening, you're Guthrie Straw.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah, you're filling in for Brock, who is, what did we say? Kentucky?
He tweets a couple times a day and tells us where he is, but I can't remember where the last one was.
I think it's like
so we
physics.
Better check the feed again.
I think it's like physics. We can know what he's doing or where he is, but
Let's
we can't know what.
Twitter right now and see what happens.
I like it though. It's like you open up Twitter and Brock is like, "I am in Scappoose."
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's your tweet for the day.
Hey, I'm told that the webpage is not available. Actually,
oh, bummer.
Can you believe that?
Twitter is down.
Anyways, how's it going? What have you been up to this week?
I have been back at the bike shop. I just got a fun opportunity to go down and visit some family in Berkeley, and took my bike down there. Didn't do as much bicycling as I had hoped to, but still got a little bit in. And then just gearing up for more film by bike. It's about 2 months out now, and so as that gets closer, I do a lot more things for it. So we just got our posters out. They'll be reaching various locations around. If anybody would like me to send them one, they can send me an email, which we might put in the show notes.
Sure. I'll put it on there.
But yeah, been great. Just sort of getting back into the flow here in Portland. And then tomorrow there's a neat event that's going on, which is sort of a tourism summit or active tourism summit that's hosted by Travel Portland. So
really?
Just getting Yeah, getting all things bicycling related.
Make sure to give me that information.
I will. Yeah, unfortunately, I wish it wasn't $45, but it's a whole day event and lunch is included. And I could imagine you can still sign up or maybe even if there's slots open. But I'm very excited about that because definitely looking to grow that trend here in Portland and through the state abroad.
What was that first thing, the film by bike?
Filmed by bike.
What is that?
You are helping
along
with that.
It's a festival of basically videos, films that are curated from entries across the world. This year, Filmed by Bike had submissions from, I think, 26 or 27 different countries.
Wow.
And then during May, this year it is May 6th through the 8th, we have a huge kickoff party at VeloCult and then show amazing bike films throughout the weekend.
Wow, that sounds awesome. I like that.
Yeah, I was looking at the film. Was over the weekend, the little like promo film that you guys put out, which incidentally Brock is in there for like maybe half a second.
Maybe I missed him. I just watched that one.
It's from last year's, there was a clip of party. the like group dance portion.
Nice.
And he's in there for like half a second. It's pretty funny.
Good Brock sightings.
Yeah. Speaking of, here is his tweet, legally ambiguous consumption at the Ohio River.
Nice.
I'm copying that picture. We're gonna post that.
Yes.
But speaking of that film, there was a marching band in that. Is the marching band going to be back this year?
I cannot say anything for now, other than that the street party will be amazing. Last year was our inaugural, or not our inaugural, but it was our first film festival that we had at the Hollywood Theater, and we sort of went above and beyond what would normally be considered the effort we put into the street fest. But it's funny because we go above and beyond every year. So it's just sort of building onto
it.
You
just keep raising
the bar. Yes, exactly. It's like, well, that was fun last year. What can we do that's even more fun than that? But I'm not sure if they'll be joining us yet again. We should be releasing that list a little bit later, either this month or early next month.
And tickets available yet?
Yep. Yes. Yeah, tickets went on sale March 1st, so you can go online. We've actually had quite a few of them that have sold already.
Oh,
people
wow.
are chomping at the bit, so nice to see some of those VIP passes going out. You can get a single pass that's good for everything over the entire weekend, or you can just go show by show. But yeah, they've been selling so far like hotcakes. We're very excited to see people sort of getting into that, and they will be available all the way until the festival in May.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Oh, it's worth your money. It's worth your time. I usually do the VIP pass.
Yeah, that's a great way to go. You just you don't have to worry about this show or that show. You sort of just choose which ones you want to go show up and watch
and
cool movies.
Like even if you only make like one or two of the days, it makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like if you're going to go to more than two and a half, three shows, you get a lot more with a VIP pass.
Yep. Definitely.
And I just like the word VIP.
Yeah.
I want people to know.
For sure.
That's right.
That I'm not just anybody.
Exactly.
Well, one year they did like a different bracelet for each showing.
Oh, yeah, I was there that year.
Like, I had the collection of all the bracelets.
Yeah, I think
could
I was.
Could have done the VIP and got one, but instead you had.
Well, no, I did have the VIP, but since
they
each
did
showing still had its own one.
Their
was,
own
like,
nice. Coloration. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, because that was the last year before I came on staff. I think I volunteered that year, but just attended regularly.
Yes.
I went to some electronic event, and they had bracelets, but they had barcodes on them. And no one wanted to wear a bracelet with a barcode.
Oh,
like,
really?
People were, all these techies were
something
just morally
about the,
opposed.
Something
just like,
about the barcode.
I am not wearing a barcode. I am not a number. I'm a free man. Like, nobody wanted to do that.
Even though, like, you know, they probably got on the computer and registered for these tickets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they probably have their names all over the internet, and a lot of them were bloggers and podcasters. Like, you're not going to control me with a bracelet.
I wonder if they made it like super cool, like you get a temporary tattoo with your barcode on it, and then it fades out after the event or something like that.
Or if it was just a a near field,
if you could
some
read
electronic
it with Google
thing,
Glass.
No one would care.
Yep.
It's like, oh no, that's not a barcode.
Use your Oculus Rift to get into this convention.
Retina scan activated.
Exactly.
QR codes. It always throws me back to QR codes.
Mm-hmm.
You know those little like squares.
Yep.
I'm seeing them more and more, even though I'm told they're kind of
dying
the way that the way of the dodo.
Isn't that weird? Like some things come and go, and that seemed like on the bus ID for the phone.
Oh, pass, my TriMet, my TriMet tickets
with that code
iPod,
first, and it's like. Everyone says, can you read this? Yes, I can. Yep. Come on aboard.
Yep. I think the TriMet app, I've actually been using that quite a few times recently, and it's actually really smooth now. I know there's a couple of things that folks were concerned about when it first launched, but I didn't have
any
issues.
I call it the slow phone.
The slow phone?
Because it's way slower than money.
Oh, okay. I mean, once I got my card in there.
My theory is... Uh-huh. They should charge you an extra dollar if you activate that while you're on the bus.
Oh,
if you are standing there for 20 minutes at a bus stop, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait.
Just standing there.
Hold on.
I'm using Twitter. Wait. And then the bus shows up, and then you step onto the bus and go, hold on.
Get my app up.
See, I'm not that guy. I'm the guy who.
Yeah. Put my code in. Let's see. One ticket all day. There.
Here's the thing. I thought for the longest time you needed like some sort of internet connection, either like via the cell phone or via Wi-Fi, in order to activate that. That is not true.
No, I don't know. Yeah.
I bought a slew of like tickets for, you know, from the app.
Yeah.
And I was kind of stranded one night and was like, well, either
it'll work or
I'll pay them cash.
Or I'll use the graphic that I stole from the internet that looked just like the past. Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do, though, because there's so much going
on. Not when you're looking at bus drivers. Bus drivers are just like waving you in. Get in.
Yep.
You do the slow phone trick and then show it in the mirror. Hey, is this okay? Yeah. Go on in, sir. Sit down.
This is me. Like, I never would have even considered that because I have it, when I leave the house, that's when I... clock my ticket.
There you go.
It's like it never takes me 3 hours to get where I'm needing to
there,
go.
Yeah.
But it's nice for groups. If you have like 10 people and you want to just get it done.
Yeah.
Super easy.
And you can
that.
Do all 10.
Yeah.
On one.
Right on
You're
one.
You're hosting and you just say, oh, look, 10 number.
Yep.
Ticket. That is really awesome.
That's what I found.
When I found that out too, like when I found that out, Anna and I going out and I was like, well, I'll try. Oh, look, we can do it.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like inevitably somebody in your party never has cash. So it's just like, here, let me grab you.
Or they have like a 50. I got a 50.
can you break this?
Yes, I get asked that all the time.
Oh, man.
Do you have change? You know this is the new century, 21st century. Bus drivers haven't carried money for about 60 years.
Right.
So. You should carry a big jar of pennies and just be like, sure.
There was a guy. Back before all the electronic stuff, this is how he got his permanent free ticket. He had the old style double size silver dollars.
Mm.
Not silver, but big dollars. And he'd
go. Like the Sacagawea dollars?
No, the big ones.
Oh, okay.
And he'd go.
Like the Kennedy dollars.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And he'd go up and go, oh, these don't fit. And he'd do this like he's trying to fit every day.
Wow.
Right? Every day. Oh, can I just ride? And he would, and it was like a game. So one day he came up and he goes, oh, and he does the same thing. Kid, this is like the eighth time in a month. And I said, oh, I don't know. Let me see those. Oh, yeah, you can ride. And I put $2 in the machine and kept his silver.
Nice.
And he's like, well, wait. I said, did I just blow your free pass?
Oh, man. Oh,
he
wow.
was not. He was a little unhappy.
Was there like a memo circulating TriMet? Like, look out, the silver dollar man.
We do have names for people, but he we do have.
I often wondered. Because there was a time where I got busted trying to get on the max.
I still have a ticket from 1999.
back in my less than lawful days, I guess. Yeah.
He was a rebel.
Yeah. But they just booted me off. But in the meantime, I could hear over the radio, like, they're calling in about someone else.
Yep.
Oh,
and
there
was, like, some code name that they used. They're like, oh, that lady.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's people who have names.
And they, like, so when this lady's name came, you know, over the radio, like, I was suddenly small potatoes. They're like, just get off and go pay for it.
Wow.
We got somebody to handle.
You lucked out. So I got a warning back in college, which was about 6 years ago now. And
because everybody's got to try it once.
Well, it wasn't even that.
Everyone's got to get caught once. They try it like 30 times.
So it wasn't even that. And as weird as it sounds, so I was going to college out in Forest Grove, and it was late at night, and some part of me didn't realize you jump three zones in one stop when you travel from downtown.
Oh, back when they did the zone
thing. Well, they still, it was you, Yeah, I guess the zone thing, exactly. So I didn't realize that between Pioneer Square, or actually I got on, I think at Goose Hollow, between Goose Hollow and the Beaverton Transit Mall, it's you jump out of the two zone. And so I paid for a ticket, and then 5 minutes later I got taken off the MAX because it wasn't for all zone pass.
Oh.
And, you know, I didn't see the transit map till I got on and just got unlucky, but they let me off with a warning, and that was the only time I didn't pay for full fare, but... You know, I'm always happy to give TriMet $250.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes, they could use it.
I think enough time has passed the statute of limitations. I never enforce those things. I just would wave people on. They'd say, is this enough? Yeah, that's perfect.
Isn't there, and maybe this is just something from a distant memory, but was there like an enforcement where if they came and did a stop on a bus where if you were under fare, did that go on the bus driver for letting them in?
Or? No, never. Okay. Never. They, I mean, they've tried so many different
things,
permutations of how to get people, but they just don't. In 9 years, I've had 4 times they've got on my bus.
Okay.
And I can tell, I'll tell everybody, all you people out there want to ride the, if it's after like 8:30, all the fare inspectors go home.
Yeah.
Unless you're at a Timbers game.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's road supervisors.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But I don't think I've ever been fare boarded after hours. So
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, for me, to get them on quicker,
right?
Just get on. I don't care. There was
keeps you on schedule.
One lady, stops me from being punched.
There you go.
It's like I'm not enforcing anything. They want us to be a fare advisor. I'm like, no. I'm a hand waver. Go on in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not enforcing or advising.
Well,
you're an adult. You've been on the bus before.
Bigger cities like Mexico City, New York City, even Pittsburgh, there's some sort of separation between the rider and the driver.
Yep. Yeah. We call that the dream zone.
The dream zone.
I was in San Francisco, and they didn't have it, and I was actually a little surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the downtown transit, they just had a double long bus. And I was almost expecting it, but maybe it's chill there so far as well.
Right. Well, it's the West Coast, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
We're all chill.
Portland was...
I mean, but jump south to L.A., I wonder what the change would be.
Right.
Portland is enamored with the idea that everybody was angels. When they built the light rail, when they built the buses. Mm-hmm. There was a time in the 80s when we had an honor system. No one ever asked about your fare. You just got on, did whatever you want.
Right.
And it was a complete failure. And when they designed the MAX at that time, the train.
So we weren't angels in the 80s either?
No, we're just humans, right? It's like
dang it.
A human sitting there going, it's 10 o'clock at night. Maybe I can just ride for free. But, and then when they designed the MAX system, instead of making an isolated rail boarding area, they made it all open.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was you couldn't stop people from getting on or having trouble in that area, or
no
people using it as drug zones. And some of the stops on the rail are just awful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was a photo that was circulating around a couple weeks ago that some kind Samaritan had written, don't use cash in this machine. Somebody peed in the coin deposit.
So then you go to grab your change.
Exactly.
And it's got
I just got to think you're a special kind of brave to pee into an electronic device,
or a special kind of drunk.
That's true.
If you're in Old Town Chinatown or something.
Yeah. Maybe this will take. But I just think of all the places you could that into an electronic device has got to be low on the list.
Oh yeah.
There's so many walls in this city.
I know. We're a city built for peeing.
This is kind of an embarrassing story, but what the heck. When I first came to Portland about 6 years ago, I had a gross misunderstanding of the public urination laws.
Wow.
A gross misunderstanding. And... So we moved there, or I moved here, and I was with a bunch of guys. We're all in a band. We had drove across country.
What was the name of the band?
I kind of don't want to say.
I know it's more embarrassing than the pee story, but tell me the name of the band.
It's actually a decent name. They were called Ambush of Tigers.
Nice.
That's not bad.
Yeah, see, it's actually a decent name. It's
not like Rainbow Bridge or something.
We played exactly zero shows in Portland. I played exactly zero shows with the band. I was the replacement guitarist.
That's nothing to be ashamed of. That's a great band name. If you went on Spotify.
Unfortunately, I can't steal it now.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But yeah.
Ambushoftigers.com.
Patent pending. Trademark here. But anyways, we got there and we were meeting up with a guy who was going to be our drummer. And he was just like, yeah, man, everything's cool here. You know, we were all living out of our van for a week. And we're like, you know, is there a McDonald's or somewhere nearby? Like when we first got here, we all need to go use the restroom. And the guy's like, just go in these bushes over here. Like, everything's fine, man. This place is so chill. Like, you can go downtown and just pee on the walls, man. It's fine. And, like, we took that as gospel for the longest time. We thought that was, like, true. Yeah, I guess. You gotta go. You know?
Was the guy giving you the advice? Was this just random guy who
He was going to be our drummer.
And you listen to a drummer.
I
feel a drummer joke coming.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of drummer jokes. Like people just like clamoring at their headphones when they listen to this. for a good week or so, this is just the way we understood what Portland was like.
And to the point where
like one of the guys would be sleeping in the van while we were like, you know, couch surfing on someone else's, you know, in someone else's house. They'd be like, you know, we can house like three of you, but like two of you got to stay in the van. Yeah, no problem, man. That's cool. And whoever's staying in the van, you know, they just get up and like pee right there on the sidewalk or whatever.
Like
eventually someone came out, you know, of their house and they're like, what are you doing? You can't do that.
That's pretty funny.
That was your Portlandia moment.
Exactly.
Yeah, from somewhere else. Oh yeah, in Portland you could.
Wait, what's the statute
anywhere?
Of limitations on public urination? Yeah, I know. What did I just confess?
I think it's just generally 20
till
years.
Till it dries
in Oregon.
20 years?
No, it's till it dries.
Oh,
then you're free. Okay.
Or rains.
You can't prove
rains.
Right. Oh,
you can't prove
well,
anything.
We're good then.
Bingo.
I'm gonna crack open this Virgil's root beer. Ooh.
You know what does have a wall, but you shouldn't pee on it? This is the worst promo ever. The beer mongers.
I think it leads
division.
Very, very well into what's happening this Thursday. Like if there's going to be a day where that happened, it would be.
It would be this Thursday, isn't
there you go.
It? Yeah. This Thursday is a special day for people who are Irish or people who are claiming to be Irish or people who just like to see Irish things happen.
As you can tell, I'm pro food holiday. So food or drinking, I'm in.
This is kind of a food holiday, whatever it is,
I'm in.
Get out your corned beef.
Yeah.
And what else would you serve with that?
Haggis, no.
Whiskey.
Whiskey.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Get out your Jameson and corned beef.
And potatoes. And
your Lagavulin, 18 year.
My horrible Irish accent. Potatoes.
mine would quickly devolve into like some kind of pirate.
I can do drunk Scottish guy better than Irish
than Irish dude.
Yeah.
St. Patty's Day. I usually try to like hide.
Fair enough.
There's this guy.
Are you the anti-Irish?
Well, I'm not Irish at all.
I feel like why are you hiding?
I feel like if you avoid downtown.
I'm neither decent. Irish nor Catholic, so like this holiday doesn't really do a whole lot for me as far as historically.
Are you
speaking.
A snake?
I am not a snake.
So no relation to St. Patrick's at all.
Yeah. I was not driven off the island. Yeah. You know,
I drove off the island into the ocean. That was from being drunk.
that was from too much St. Patty's Day. But anyways, one place you could celebrate your St. Patty's Day with both alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages is the Beer Mongers at 12th and Division.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Dan, you and I both got the Virgil's root beer there, which is kind of a new addition.
I used to have
the Steelhead. And what are you drinking there, sir?
I am drinking Belching Beaver Brewery's Peanut Butter Milk Stout.
Belching Beaver.
Exactly.
I knew I was going to stumble as I tried to say that.
You didn't see me reading it three times before I knew I was coming up.
I saw you staring at the table.
What was he doing?
I thought you were just really wanting
to share.
Well, I do. It's tasty. It's basically if Voodoo had gotten their maple bacon correct in terms of like food and beer are concerned. That would be this beer.
Oh, because they tried to do like a maple bacon beer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great beer, but you have to have 8 friends because you can only drink about a shot's worth before it becomes overpowering.
Oh.
But this one is really nice. I really like the peanut butter, the milk stout. It comes off just a tiny bit strong at the very first sip, but then everything else it has been very mellow. And it actually won a silver medal at the World Beer Championships. And they're based out of Oceanside, California.
Ooh. Wow. And speaking of silver medal, you know what's coming up this summer?
Hold on. I just want to say the ginger brew. I also have ginger Portland ginger brew. Fantastic!
Yeah, you were really loving on that earlier. I should have hit record a little bit earlier.
I was like, oh, this is the drink of the gods. silver medal.
Olympics coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know who's going to be... going to be broadcasting the Olympics or showing the Olympics at their
place. I've got a guess.
Go ahead.
Beer Mongers.
I'm 12th in division. Thanks again to Beer Mongers for continuing to provide us with libation.
Yeah, nice people there.
So Dan.
Yes.
What have you been on? Whoa, I almost like knocked over the...
Well, you know, I've been perpetually right. I'm slipping into that bad Irish accent. Well, you know, I suppose
That's the ginger talking.
Yeah. It's the kombucha.
All of a sudden, I'm the Lucky Charms guy. That's as good as my accent gets. No, I've been, you know, I was like working on a book for 3 years. I realized, and I think getting done fast. So I actually realized that... I work best at writing when it's a small part of my life and not so much when it's a large part of my life. And so I started blogging again.
Right.
And man, then my writing picks up.
Really?
Yeah. It's like I need that finite time. I need that almost panic edge. Ooh, I only got 40 minutes to write this. If I have 4 hours to write this, I'd... Not no. I'm like, I better check Twitter.
Oh,
what's this game? It's a World War II tank simulation. I just better try it out just to see if it's accurate. Oh, no. Whatever.
They got the Panzer wrong. What the hell?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Panzer D doesn't. Yeah. I like anything historical, so I'm like, oh, what's this? Ooh, they discovered a new treasure find in Ireland. Mm.
You used to have like a history podcast, did you not?
Yes, yes, yes. We did. It was history and people who recreate history, different groups and organizations, and that was really fun. I loved it. I had a really good co-host, which makes everything easy. But we just talked about medieval history and all the crazy things and kind of done away with the myth of the Dark Ages. Like it's kind of a term that doesn't accurately describe what was going on when they were making universities and spreading all over the earth. And,
right.
You know, it's
but
like,
it sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Well, from the Renaissance,
ooh,
you wanted to have a line between the Dark Ages and us in the Renaissance. You
right.
know? So they really love the term Dark Ages. Huh. And then the people who read that said, well, that was what it was called, but...
They call
it the migration period, or it has got different names, but...
So it was more like kind of a kind of an epithet that the people of the Renaissance put on the period.
Kind of. It seems like it. It seems like... You know, part of the problem is there wasn't a lot of history being written.
Okay.
You know, it was there were areas in Europe where there just wasn't a lot of writing going on, and so we didn't know. But when you look back and you start to see all these ports, and you don't invest in building a port unless you have trade.
Right.
You don't have trade unless you're dealing with other people and have production.
So life was happening.
Yeah, yeah. Life went
on. The economy was happening.
Right. And what everyone sort of blamed the downside on the people of that era, but actually the economic decline started at the late Roman period. They had actually gone back to almost barter, where you paid your taxes with cows and chickens,
right, right.
And because their money system broke the last few hundred years of Rome, it was like, oh, well, we just kept printing money, and they kept getting inflation. They didn't understand. They didn't even have a name for inflation. They just had, the prices keep going up. The problem is there's not enough, or there's too much gold in the money, so we'll put silver or mix something else with the gold and print new money, and they kept printing money, and the inflation kept going up. They didn't have a clue till it broke. And so the sort of the Dark Ages, they'd say, was an era of economic decline, but it was an era of economic recovery where it was starting to come back from the decline that Rome actually initiated.
So there was a lagging effect.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But you did have people that you'd see products, even in like barbaric people by modern standard, the Vikings. If you go through their tombs, you find products from all over the world, like turbans and peacocks and, you know, that people think, oh, they're all these big, dirty, hairy guys. And you'd see them buried. Almost all of them are buried with combs. Mm-hmm. It's like, why does everybody have a comb if they never were always, you know, like the movies, they're always this big, you know.
I wonder if, I mean, I feel like the Vikings in particular have been shed in a much brighter light or in like research learned in the last 20 years as opposed to any time prior.
I don't know. It's weird because they were, you paint with a broad brush here, so everyone's going to write down, oh, they had runes, they had right. They were an illiterate group. They didn't, in the whole, they didn't record things. So we don't know a lot. Most of what we know comes from archaeology or written by their sworn enemies.
Gotcha.
So you can imagine how accurate that is.
Sure.
So, and it's also like a 300-year period. So the Vikings at the very first of the era, much different than the Vikings at the very end.
Sure.
So it'd be like saying Americans were all X, right? We're all one thing.
Right.
In our 300-year life,
yeah.
Doesn't really work, does it?
Yeah.
So,
well, and with life expectancy as well, that's a very shortened period, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was, they're learning a lot about them, but, I mean, they were no angels.
Mm-hmm.
They're what? No, they, you know, that's one thing you learn.
They didn't trade on the honor system?
They did. They loved trade. They were big traders, but they weren't cultural imperialist, which is weird, because you would think being a big violent crew, some of them, that would be a big thing. Like where the Romans went, they turned you into Romans. Where the Greeks went, they turned you into Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to the Isle of Man off of England, and you see one generation ruled by Vikings. They have Viking names. Second generation, you have Viking names and local names. Third generation, you have local names. Right?
So it was more integrated.
Yeah. A lot of those areas where they set up camp, like in Russia, they just blended into the Russians and they blended into the French. And the northern coast of France is called Normandy, and Norman means Northman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, they isn't this a history show?
Right? I like it. No, so I'm going to reveal how ignorant I am on some fronts, even in Portland terms. I didn't know Montevilla stood for Mount Tabor Park.
Yeah.
People would say, I'm in Montevilla, and I'd be like, where the heck is that?
That area.
Yeah, no.
Montevilla.
I've lived in Montevilla for 2 years, and I didn't even know that, so.
Yeah.
Really? In terms of abbreviations or like foundings of names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Multnomah Village, or not Multnomah Village, but Mount Tabor Park.
Mount Tabor. Montevilla.
Mount Tabor.
Village on the mountain. Villa. Mount Tabor.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It was quite a little isolated pocket at one time from Portland. There's some restaurants out there that have pictures from the old days of Montevilla. Mm-hmm. You can see there's like, that train track leads to Portland.
Yep.
And there's this, like, dirt road businesses. Yeah. It's like, oh, this was a different town.
Where was it recently? They stripped off a bunch of layers on the road, and I think it was, like, on 50th, actually.
Yeah.
Like,
for the
between
bikeway?
No.
It's all, maybe. And they find the train tracks?
Yeah, between Division and, like, Hawthorne.
Yeah.
They stripped a bunch of the road off, there's, like, tracks there.
Yeah, that was run by, I had a ticket. My aunt gave me a ticket from the people who ran that system.
Really?
It was a local power company. And one of the things they did is they had extra power and they'd have these electric trolleys.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a way they could keep making money.
A lot of Portland was actually like that. So Belmont Street, Hawthorne Street, those all used to be sort of suburbs per se, but you'd take the trolley into downtown. And then as those were paved over, so if you went underneath Hawthorne Street, you'd find very similar.
Also the same. Huh.
And it's interesting to look like on the Burnside Bridge, used to be mostly tracks and only one lane for cars each direction. But the rest of it was rail tracks.
And a lot of it was sort of privatized at that period. So you'd either live in a housing community that got a discounted fare, or that would be a perk, is that you have to live on the east side, but guess what? You're never more than, you know, so far from a track that'll take you downtown.
Yeah. So Portland spread quickly, but filled in slowly.
Yeah.
So a lot of the little areas were actually little towns and little, mm-hmm. actually Portland and East Portland used to be like east side was its own city.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
If you go up into the Deakum neighborhood, you'll see that sort of town plot at effect where all the sort of crisscrossing streets are. They basically ran a train up there and said, all right, here it is.
Here's the grid.
And it was old farm plots or vacant land that was basically imposed upon with that structure. But there was no formal, basically, guidance at the city level. And so if you owned it, you could basically do whatever you wanted.
And because we formed late in the industrial period, the price of steel and rail had come down drastically. So it was easier to run a rail to somewhere than to almost do a road. So a lot of these suburbs were connected by a rail route, like the Springwater Corridor.
And was a, yeah, was
I'll tell you a funny story. There was a guy, you'll see Holiday Center.
Uh-huh.
Ben Holiday was a weird kind of old Western guy who...
Is that the dude that, like, bought up, like, all of Lloyd?
Yeah.
Okay. Holiday.
The Grand Vision.
Well, Holiday was an illiterate, foul-mouthed guy who made his money getting supplies to the Union Army. And then he had, like, he was like the UPS of the day. And he sold all that, and he moved to Portland. And he realized Portland, he put in the first rail in Portland and downtown.
Right.
And one of the things was the lucrative business was mail. If you run a rail to somewhere, you got the mail, you got a cut of all the mail that went there.
Huh.
So there was, at that time, Oregon City, just a few miles from Portland, was the capital. And they had a race. Who was going to build a track between downtown Portland and Oregon City? And it was the city fathers and all the, you know, hoity-toities on one side. And on the other side was dirty, foul-mouthed Ben Holiday. And that's why we have, from just Portland to Oregon City, we have two sets of tracks, one on each side of the river. They were racing to get the contract.
Really?
Yeah. And Ben Holiday beat him.
Yep.
So he got the contract.
If I'm not sure if you've heard of it, too. There's a really neat class, the active transportation class, that's put on by the city in combination with PSU. But they cover a lot of that as well. So if you've not taken it yet, super fun.
I guess that's what I'll be doing later.
Or if you live in Portland, any public citizen is eligible to apply for a scholarship to the class.
Awesome.
Very nice.
I might have to take that.
Super fun.
I imagine I just you love, could just teach it. I don't know.
I just love the idea of we had that strange combination of sailors, Old West,
and
like loggers,
finery, and
and loggers and settlers, and the Steel Age coming on.
Yeah,
it was like that's a. It's hard to get your brain around how that affected Portland.
Well,
and how we grew differently than say the organic growth of Boston or New York or those areas where it was just mostly walking or cart, and all of a sudden, it's easier to build rail. We'll build a rail out there and bring food in from over here and build something over there. And yeah, it's bizarre. It made a different looking city. So I love that era. I think that someone should do a movie back then, like Deadwood, but set in Portland and without so much bad language.
Without so much bad language.
I don't know. Don't make me do my Deadwood imitation.
I only watch like half an episode.
What character would you do from Deadwood?
I would be Swearengin.
Oh, of course.
That guy was the best.
There's tons of YouTube clips of like his best, quote unquote, best clips.
He's great.
He was an interesting character.
At least
the way they wrote him. And what's that actor's name now?
The guy who
McShane,
yeah.
Does such a great job.
Everything he touches is good.
Kings, have you seen him in Kings?
I saw a little bit of that.
You should watch Kings.
Yeah, he's just really good.
We're now a TV podcast. We're a TV review podcast.
So what have you been watching on your TV?
Going back to writing, though, you said you work better doing just small snippets.
Yeah. Under a little bit of a time pressure.
Right. Does this mean you're not going to work on the book anymore?
No, I am. It has doing the blog has sped up my book production quite a bit.
I see.
It's weird. I don't know why I'm that way, but what it gives me is two small things I have to do every day.
Right.
Rather than one big thing, which I just like, I get, there's got to be a way to put this off.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's hard to break down.
Yeah, yeah.
You just feel overcome.
Yeah, it is really. And I got a structure in my daughter's helped a little bit trying to, I'm going to have little tweets I've done interspersed in there. Observations I made along the way.
So are we allowed to know the overarching theme of this book?
It's going to cover my 10 years of driving.
Okay.
And it's going to be framed in a year. It's 10 years compressed into a year. So everything is seasonally told. Like, it might be out of order, but it's seasonally in order.
Right.
And so you'll... You know, if you have a 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night, you sit down, you say, well, I'll read a short story about bus driving and I'm up to fall. Hmm. And so it's going to be a lot of simple stories, nothing really big. And no, it's just things that have happened along the way. And
no overarching moral purpose.
No, Jesus, no.
Nothing that attempts to act as a spokesperson for TriMet.
No. They don't like me. But they don't hate me, but they don't like me. They don't like anybody that conflicts. They don't want anybody
don't rock the boat
in a position that could conflict with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't want the media going, hey, we have a question about TriMet. Let's go to Dan.
Right.
Oh, they don't like, no. It's like Highlander. There shall be only one.
Do you still get those? Do you have to send them over to the spokesperson?
I don't have to.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I don't talk usually about the current news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a news podcast. I'm not, there's other guys who do that. Mm-hmm. Al and some other people who do blogs and podcasts and stuff about current, this issue's hot. Let's talk about that. And they get better ratings in the short term than I do.
Mm.
But I talk about what it's like to be a driver. You know, the day and night of being a driver at 3 a.m,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not the grab you headlines,
yep.
which come and go. But, in 2008, when we had a big snowstorm, it was like once one of the news services started bashing TriMet, all of them jumped on.
Oh, really?
Like, there was no defense. It was, and yet, I mean, we were all sleeping at the garage. I was literally driving on 5 hours of sleep
mm-hmm.
and then spending all day driving on ice and going back on the garage and sleeping under my boss's desk
yep.
and getting up and doing it again and again and again. And I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about that. And that's why I started writing the blog.
Okay.
Is because I was like, the things that make you mad really motivate you.
Right.
Sure.
Right. And you're just like, oh, I'm going to really give them. And so I messed around with a couple different ideas. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to go after anybody. I'll just tell the story and let the chips fall where they may.
Because
mm-hmm. we're not like superheroes. There's, you know, dorky and idiot bus drivers just like everyone else. And
you're not all angels?
Please. I am. But they're not. No. But you know what I mean? It's really more about the day-to-day in and out, what it's like to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see and what you experience. Sometimes I take on a more weightier subject, but a lot of times this is the thing that happened just recently that made me laugh was I had there's a saying I have, which is the stupid tree drops its apples in everyone's backyard.
Sure.
So it's like we have a game show spinner. And it's like, okay, today we're having, and it's like different cultures. Bzzz, the Hispanic thug, right? Yesterday it was the white wannabe thug. And today it was these four guys, and they got on my bus, and I knew just seeing them. I said, uh-oh. If these guys aren't bad, they're dressing in the bad uniform. And they got on my bus, and sure enough, it was trouble right away. And I'm greeting them like, okay, come on in. And it was starting to get bad and starting to get bad. And finally, the hardest thing for us is to know when to draw a line between two customers, right? It's easy when you're attacking me, but it's hard when you two are arguing, right? I'm like, what do I do? When do I? And finally I said, that's it. You guys can't do this, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, So I pull over to a stop and I'm loading people and this big guy gets on and this couple gets on, and then there's these two women who get on with groceries, and I get out and help them on. And I get back on the bus, I fire it up, and I'm, all of a sudden it's peaceful on my bus. I'm like, it worked. Hmm. I'm driving. I said, oh, my God. I never had the young thugs listen to a dad-based, hey, stop that. So I'm driving. I'm like, oh, my God. I leveled up. I'm like the Kung Fu master bus driver. And everybody who left would come up and whisper, that was awesome.
Nice.
And I'm like, yeah, wasn't it? Huh. And then I hear these women talking. And one of them picks up her phone and calls, makes a call. And I'm sitting at a light, so I'm kind of watching what's going on in the bus. And I see these guys in the back. They're just sitting there. And then I hear a phone ring in the back of the bus. And I'm like, whoa. And then the guy goes, and she stands up and looks. And she starts calling his name in Spanish. And he's like, ducking down. And the guy he's ducking down behind is the guy he was just calling names in Spanish. So that guy slid to the side, revealing him. And that woman stood up and started yelling at him. Now, there's forces in the world like ISIS that we know about. And, you know, there's the old Russian communists and the KGB. But no one had ever taught me about the Mexican auntie. Let me tell you, they have a power all to themselves. This guy, I had a worker who was standing up front and was whispering to me what they were yelling in Spanish. And just like I didn't yell to them to stop yelling and picking fights, I let these women go. And they, oh, my God, that guy wish he was on another bus. He was supposed to stop and help them take the groceries home, but just happened to get on the same bus with them.
Oh, wow.
And these two women went back there, got him, drug him back up to the front of the bus. They were yelling at the other guys. And when they said something, they were like, the guy's like, they're going to call their parents.
Oh, man.
And all of a sudden, this guy's up front, and he wasn't so tough anymore. Hmm. You know, I wasn't F you, fat bus driver. All of a sudden, I was Mr. Bus Driver. You know, and these two aunts just, oh, my God, the Mexican auntie just, oh. And funny thing, when they got off the bus, those guys came up and helped them off with their groceries.
I imagine.
And I'm like, that is epic. That is just human. Like, in 9 years, only time I saw something like that. And it was just beautiful. Like, yep, well, playing the tough guy game. How tough are you? The Mexican aunties, the power to be reckoned with.
That's right.
So there's no overarching story. It's just all snippets like that. That's little cool things you see.
I saw also, when was it that you put out your movie script?
You read the script?
I paged through a little bit, but I think I got the gist of it.
Yeah. Dennis Costello and I wrote that about 2 years ago. And he needed a short script. And I did the basics, and then he polished it off. Mm-hmm. And he's in Hollywood, and he's editor. Mm-hmm. And so he was looking to get some more production under his belt.
Yeah, I saw that there. It said, you know, just include me in the credits.
Yeah,
feel free to use it.
Yeah, yeah. We just, like, free to use. A lot of the stuff I write, I just, like, go ahead, copy it, tag me on it, and you're good.
No, it's fun. I liked seeing it there. It's for putting together films, it's always interesting when a script for a popular movie comes out. And so it's interesting to see sort of the parallels and the writing and the dialogue between various, basically, writers. And
Yeah. It's, well...
You seem to be a person of many, many interests.
Yeah.
I like it.
There's another phrase for that, easily distracted.
But in a good way, I think.
I hope so.
I mean, you're directing your energy. It just happens to be to a different thing every now and then.
Every now and then. Do you remember that big spinner? I got one for me, too. I'm like, what's today? Greek history. Oh. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, I liked writing. I like storytelling. I'm a storyteller. Dennis is a script writer. Mm-hmm. So, together we make a good team. And I have a couple creative people like that.
Nice.
That help me make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the realm of storytelling, it just reminded me, Humanity on Wheels coming up.
Yeah, I'm going.
I was going to say, are you going to be telling a story there?
Oh, I'm fired up. I got one.
Yeah?
I got it. I'm going to do a... do something for them.
I think that's where I first met you was, mm-hmm. was it Humanity on Wheels 2, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Jack London downstairs?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I love the Portland community that comes together and will find stories in strange places. Like the idea that you just do films from a bike. The idea that you do a big get-together and everyone talks about transit experiences. The mm-hmm. idea that is all over Portland.
Yeah.
That idea that in something that could be simple, there's a story. I like that.
There's a sort of a shared experience in the, I don't want to say mundane, because it's not mundane per se, but I guess there's, seemingly mundane.
Yeah, or investment in a commonality or
yeah.
something like that.
It's what's common in all of us. It's what's human in us that makes those stories work.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's when you reach what's human in somebody, then you're dealing with them in a real way. You know, it's hard to be mad at somebody. You're when you see the humanity in them.
Sure.
What's human sure. in them. That's,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that even brings me back to this story you just told of like these guys trying to like look all hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's really easy to kind of like put them on this sort of otherness and to say like, yeah, you know, man, I hate it when people like try to act all tough, but then like to see them sort of brought down and then, you know, brought back to the
real world.
To the real world and you know, helping out their aunts and like, oh yeah, everybody's got an auntie like that. Everybody's got someone in their life
yep.
that like no matter how tough or how whatever you think you are, somebody is always gonna like kind of bring you back
yeah.
to remind you you're
here,
just
here's
a human.
Where you're human. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. I found that like driving a bus that the big point to get to is what people need. People will tell you what they need. Angry people will tell you what they need. Crazy people will tell you what they need. And most drivers are too busy trying to stop them from behaving a certain way to acknowledge what they're saying they need. So my biggest weapon is, wait a minute. I hear you saying you need a free ride. And the guy goes, yes. And I go, start with this great story. Okay, here's the deal. I just got a... Are you telling me you need a free ride? Yeah, go on in. I'm glad to do that for you.
Right on.
And finding what people need is more important than telling them what to do. And more effective.
And this reminds me of another blog entry that you had about... It was a fellow driver.
Becky.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Becky. And how... The thing that they need isn't necessarily the thing that they say they might need.
Right.
You know, and so sometimes it takes a little bit of digging.
I've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
At digging, and you start at first.
Kind of like, well, like this example that you brought up where the guy's like, I just got out of jail. I just did this. I just, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, let's find what you need from all of what right. you just said.
And, you know, I give out a lot of tickets for yeah. free, and I never get in trouble for it. I tell you know, if somebody's got a legitimate story, I'm not here as the world judge.
Right.
I'm like, boom, who gets to be the hero? Bang, there you go. On to the next stop, you know?
What is like, as a driver, like, is there some sort of, like, recourse that you have to, like, is there, I don't know. Does that come out of your paycheck or
no,
anything?
No. Especially if you're a late night driver, giving out tickets is like insurance policy for not getting punched. Like if you look on YouTube, you'll see videos of drivers getting punched, and it's almost always over fare.
Mm.
Don't do that. They don't pay me enough to, you know.
You're a nickel short.
Hey, nickel short. Here, hit me in the cheek. I get 2 days off paid. I'm not going to do that.
Mm.
So my job is to find out what you need, get it to you, move on. And if I, you know, so what? They take advantage of it sometimes. But guess what? I also have had the advantage of having a bus full of people that love me. And then somebody starts something bad, and all of a sudden the whole bus rises up, and guess what? It's no longer bad. So, and that happens because you play a little.
You garner a little bit of free will.
Yeah, yeah.
Or goodwill.
Goodwill, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And that's human nature. You know, that's how we behave. And but when you find out what people need, you're finding out what's human in them. And they respond to that. They respond to you doing that for them. And that's like my new lesson in life when I deal with people. I'm like, what does this person need? What is he telling me he needs? What does he really need? Oh, he needs this. You know, then and instantly we have a different rapport. And it works. It works really good. And it's and look at a lot of bus drivers or anybody who's in a position of authority sometimes believes that that position imbues you with some, you know, real legitimate. Right. Well, you just it's like, you know, American foreign policy. We think, oh, because we got the big army. Guess what we get to do? Right. And the same thing if you're a bus driver. You think, oh, because I can call the police and order people to do things. Guess what I get to do? But it's. If you want to make a career out of it and be happy when you go home at night and go, what? When I walk out and I hit the parking lot, I'm like, phew, all erased.
Nice. Yeah, that's so good.
To that and not be in stress, then you got to play a different game.
Yeah, I think in any public service job, you can't carry stuff with you because it would just eat you so much.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It will... especially if you're this, you know, you're conflicting, you're hitting, you're butting heads, then you carry that with you. And, but as I showed about Becky, her big thing, and it's counterintuitive, the more fundamentally moral you are, the harder sometimes it is to deal with the public.
Yep.
Because your expectations of yourself is high.
Yeah.
Right.
And therefore your expectations.
I've never stolen. Yeah. I've never lied. I don't do that. I treat people well. Now you get on a bus with people, you know, not everyone on the bus is bad, but there's a lot of people who make those three things a life.
Yeah.
A lifestyle. And now you have to deal with them. Now what? Now you have a choice of either fighting them and protecting your moral standing or learning to roll easy and figuring out what they need.
Do you find that within that realm, there is a line, like a personal line that you have, like some things that will push you over the edge? Or has that shifted over time, or has it never been there to start with?
It sounds immoral. Nothing moves me.
Yeah, I mean, just now, like, do you have a sticking point within that philosophy?
Yes. And that is, I don't accept violence in my bus. In violence and intimidation... I have to intervene. And so to me, that's a different act. That's self-defense. And some people can't actuate self-defense. You know, the 70-year-old guy on the bus can't actuate self-defense. And I'm there to actuate self-defense for him. I don't personally get up and whip out my nunchucks and start fighting, but I get people to help them solve that. And I don't... you know, self-defense is different than aggression, and I'm anti-aggression and pro-self-defense.
Okay.
Which, you know, I have to open that umbrella to, like, family and people on the bus who just don't have, or just some guy, you know, is on the bus. He doesn't want any problems. He's just trying to get home.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden you hear someone else go, what are you looking at? And that's like, uh-oh, that's the red alert button in the bus, right? And that gets my attention really quick. But I still try to reach what that guy needs, right?
Sure, because obviously there's more going on than
Yeah.
Funny.
And I've had guys, hey, come up here. Tell me, what is it? What's going on? Tell me. And I'm like, I want to know. Oh, well, this. Oh, man, that sounds horrible. I'll tell you what, here's a day ticket. Have a seat here. I'm going to get you where you're going.
Yeah,
it's not perfect. It doesn't work every time. But that's the path you have to follow.
Yeah, because it's not often you'd walk onto a TriMet bus and instantly decide to be that person. You know, you might have gotten kicked out of your house.
It's rare. We call them...
Be traveling somewhere else.
We call them 1%ers.
Okay.
But it's far less than 1%. It's like in a year, maybe 2 or 3 people will be overtly violent on my bus from go. And those it's a different approach, but the same tools. Because usually they're that way for a reason. Right?
Sure.
And I get backup just in case. But if I can solve it and keep rolling, then we all win, right? We get them home. Sometimes they're hostile. That's fine. I can. And sometimes I get them to direct it at me because I'm getting paid, right? So I'm like, man, say what you want, buddy. You know, for $26 an hour, you can call me anything you want. That one guy sat up there and called me every name in the book, and I'm just driving going, do, in my head.
Yeah,
and when he got to a stop, I said, hey, have a great day. And he got off, and my only parting shot was I used the PA to say, somebody needs a hug, as I drove away. And that's it.
Yikes.
And that's what it sounded like. Somebody needed a hug. But it's rare. It's super rare. Rarer than people think. It does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, the tools are the same. You just got to have backup.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
sometimes nothing will help.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't want to be the guy who's sitting there, look, can't we just reach and hug and talk, and then you get punched again. So you got to have a balance, you know. But it's a lot of it, when you're driving, it just comes down to simple rules, is finding out what they're actually mad at, finding out what they actually need.
Yeah.
And it sounds stupid that that's it, but that is it.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like there's a lot of soft skills that, you know, you could get hired for the job and have the technical merit, but if you don't have the soft skills on the side, that it might not be the right choice, or you're going to run into more conflicts than you might need to. So
yeah. It is, you know, there was a time when they just hired people based on driving history. Like if you drove big rigs, they hired a bunch of guys who drove big rigs. Imagine how well they handled public pressure.
Right,
right. Wow. Right.
So is that a criteria? I mean,
they
like,
used to
without
do that.
Getting into the hiring process too much.
No, they look more, they would rather take somebody with no driving skills, no experience above and beyond a car. And they can teach you the driving skills, that the driving, the only thing hard about the driving isn't the actual doing. Anybody could do it. Anybody can drive a bus. But there's two catches. One is the ruthless application of attention. You have to be able to keep your mind focused on what you're doing.
Sure.
That's tough. If you can do that, then they can, they hire a lot of people with customer service skills. Mm-hmm. They teach the driving.
Okay.
That's what they do now.
That's a good approach.
Yeah. 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 It, you know, there's pros and cons with any way you go, right? But there's no magic answer. But it's definitely one way to solve a problem.
Well, and yeah. people skills are something that is a little bit tougher to teach than driving skills.
Right. You know? And it's hard to keep. Like I said, that pressure of the people who work against that every day, that's hard to keep those skills. Even I'm like, uh-oh, look at me. I'm getting all authoritarian up in here. You know, it's like I have days where I'm like, nope, got to get back on the happy island. You know,
right.
Yeah,
it happens to everyone. And so a lot of people think like I'm a Joe Happy bouncing on my bus, engaging in everything like a Robin Williams. But actually, I do more listening. When I'm on a bus, I'm listening. I'm watching traffic. I'm listening to people, because most of the times I can head off things with my ears. I'll hear the tone of what people are saying, and then there's a couple key phrases, and then that tells me what's going on. But and then I listen to what they're saying, like this is funny stuff people do, and so that's what I am when I'm driving.
Yeah.
So people get on and have a false idea that they read my blog, and that's, I write humorously because I'm goofy. I'm a goofy guy. I'm not a goofy driver. I'm a serious driver.
Sure.
And, I have goofy observations, so
that's
where I go.
I like that distinction.
Yeah.
So you're on the extra board. You don't have a regular route.
No.
Do you have a favorite route to sub in for?
The extra board is you sit there and you wait for something to go wrong, and then they send you out to do a run, or if somebody's 1 second late. So my favorite extra board run is when everybody shows up and does their work and they pay me to sit and watch TV.
Oh, wow.
That's my very favorite extra board run. I call it the couch run. So if I can get that run, that's great. That doesn't happen.
Wow.
It's rare that that happens. But when it does, I'm like, yeah, what? Look at me watching cable. shooting pool, talking with drivers.
Is that the coveted position within TriMet, is it, to be the extra board?
No. The extra board, a third of the days you drive the extra board, it's harder than any bus route.
Because you have to learn it? Or
It's just hard. You might, like today, I was in there at 5 in the morning. An hour later, I got a run. I got done. I had to come back and do another run. And then it's just crazy juggling of your life.
Gotcha.
To be here tonight, I had to do all this stuff from, I was up at 3 in the morning to get ready. So, I'm a little loopy now.
Does every driver at some point in time serve extra board, or is it something you work towards or apply for?
Should be, yeah. When you go full time from part time, you should do a stint on the extra board. It doesn't always work.
Okay.
But everyone does a stint on it, and most people go, oh, no. Because, like I said, a third of it is harder, a third of it is easier, and a third of it is the same.
Okay.
So the easy days, you're like, well, look at me. I just drove 4 hours and got paid for 8.
Huh.
But then the trains go down like they always do, and then you're, hey, look at me. I drove 4 hours, got a 3-hour unpaid break, then drove 2 hours, then got a 2-hour unpaid break,
then
drove 8 hours.
You can imagine that would be frustrating.
Yeah, and you go home and your significant other goes, what's going on?
Where were you?
You've been gone since 4 in the morning. It is now 11.
Yeah.
I've had this corned beef and potatoes on the pot all day.
I've been at beer monger's wedding, but they closed.
Yes, they kicked me out.
Go back tomorrow.
Yeah, it's murder on the personal relationships to be on the board. You got to have somebody special.
I could see that.
Do you want to stick around for headlines and mail?
Yep.
Awesome.
Headlines and mail.
I like that jingle better than this.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
All right, so first up, we got some items on our calendar. You want to read them off, Guthrie?
Sure. We have a PSC hearing on TSP. I'll let Aaron cover that. Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in Portland on Tuesday, March 22nd. The meeting is at 5 with the agenda time is to be announced.
Yes. I don't know what those acronyms are.
But it sounds cool. I would go to that.
It has to do with the Portland Transit Safety Plan, maybe? No.
Don't look at me. I'm a driver.
It has to do with the Portland master plan and the transit plan.
Interesting.
In association to that.
I love a master plan.
We also have
the comprehensive plan.
Exactly. Comprehensive plan hearing on amendments. That would be at City Hall Chambers on Thursday, April 14th from 6 to 9 p.m.
Yes. And coming up on April 5th at 7 p.m., we mentioned earlier, Humanity on Wheels, number 3 from Kick-Ass Oregon History and TriMet Diaries at the Jack London Bar, including music by Dr. Something. Do you know anything about this Dr. Something?
I don't know Dr. Something.
Dr. Something is a mystery to all of us. Hmm. But
I like Kick-Ass Oregon History. They're good people.
Yes.
And
they will be in the studio to promote this
awesome.
Shortly. Yeah.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
I tell everybody, even if you don't live in Oregon, it's a good podcast.
It's
the way they do the stories just blows your mind away.
They did... Was it last summer or 2 summers ago? They did one of their episodes live.
Yeah.
At the Jack London Bar. Were you there?
No, I couldn't make it. I was driving a bus. I went by and honked my horn, but I don't think anyone did. But I love that, and I love their treasure hunt one, and I love it's just great, especially if you know a little bit of Oregon history, that it just kicks ass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they still do. They used to do walking tours.
Well, I've seen them.
I've caught them once around town. I would love, if I had family in town, I would love to book them for a walking tour. I think it would be
awesome.
Just because, you've got some of the history and kind of the unknown history. So those of us who have been here for a while and maybe get tired of the voodoo donut or whatever, whenever there's family in town or whatever.
For sure. Yeah, it's not hard to burn out on the voodoo.
Next up on headlines.
On headlines, should you welcome the new
Yes,
donor?
Welcome.
I feel like that would be appropriate.
Welcome and thanks to our new donor, Brandon Shelby. Brandon Shelby's actually been on the show and was a member, or still is, I should say, a member of Team Sincerity. He was on the Team Sincerity President's Day ride last President's Day.
I like that name, Team Sincerity.
It's the bike team that Brock, Adele, and I kind of invented.
Oh, nice.
It's a team that isn't really a team, but like anytime there's a group thing, any of us who get together, that's the name that we go on.
Nice. I love it. I love it.
Also, we have Pedalpalooza approaching.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's a little early to start.
Oh, it's never too early for Pedalpalooza.
Yeah, promoting it, but there's already items on the calendar.
I was going to say, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, crap, I have not registered the
Guthrie
ride yet.
Yes.
It'll be on there tonight.
So that was one of the things, was like, oh, well, Guthrie's going to be in the studio.
Yeah.
I wonder, and I looked
today.
Oh,
MMR on the 10th. Crap. Well,
yeah,
we might have to go for
the
17th
Friday
then.
This time around.
Usually the Guthrie ride is the first Friday of every Pedalpalooza, but we might put on the second Friday for this next.
Oh, that's dropout prom.
Ah, this is why I need to set my calendar every year.
You could do it on the last Friday.
Yeah, well.
Is this where they had the bike jousting 1 year?
Dropout prom?
No. The Pedalpalooza.
Yay!
I think somebody had that.
Happens at the Multnomah, what used to be called the Multnomah County Bike Fair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, okay.
So it looks like it'll be, yes, the Guthrie ride, I'm thinking, is the 24th.
The 24th. Okay.
Keep a
the day
pin
before
on your calendar.
The World Naked Bike Ride.
Yeah, so many good rides to compete with, but if I do it for enough years, eventually it will make its way onto the upper
list.
It was pretty
popular last year.
Yeah, well, that's the people hear about it, and I think it's that first weekend where people are like, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to go.
Right.
I'm going to ride on
it.
Nice. So we'll see how later in the month does,
so
but
what,
it's happening.
What is distinguishing about the Guthrie ride?
So each year,
it's longer than most of the other rides.
It's a ride for people who want to ride longer at night and drink a little less beer in between.
Sounds like a good combo. Yeah. More ridey, less drinky.
Yep, that's pretty much it. I've always loved riding at night. It's one of my favorite times to ride. And I have a route which, if I have a new friend in town or an old friend who is new in town, I'll usually take them on this route. And so it might actually need to change up just a tiny bit this year, or I'll need to buy a replacement lock and some bolt cutters. But it's going to be happening. And we go on this semi-secretive route. If you haven't been on it before, I won't spoil it. But just a super fun, about two and a half hour ride that goes until about midnight or 1 a.m. on the Friday of every June.
Nice.
Just a good mellow ride. Bring your friends.
Nothing's better than that. Nice, warm summer.
Mm-hmm.
You get out there, and it's just warm enough that, like, your sweat evaporates, but not so hot, and you just can go forever. Just, that's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then at night, when, even if there is, like, any number of vehicles on the road, you can see them coming, or you can, because the lights are coming at you.
What I should do, I should contact Parks and Rec and see if I can have them leave that open. For this year, because that would be the intelligent thing to do.
That would work.
So thanks for providing the catalyst.
I was going to suggest riding it this time and seeing if there was a way around it.
There's not. I've ridden it a few times in the daytime, and it's that, or you've got to backtrack up to a highway, which will remain nameless if you've not joined us.
Yeah.
Illegal activity.
Exactly. Well, it wouldn't be a true
I was
going to
offer my bolt cutters, but now.
Parks and Rec bolt cutters. People are like, wow, this guy's really sketchy.
Right?
This is the bike ride you want to go on.
Well, I think last year there was some police crackdown in a park that the ride went through.
Right.
And they let us right through.
They were just like,
I was able to talk my way out of it. And I think having about 40 bicyclists behind me, they made the choice. They were like, what do you need?
You're not up to any bad things.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
They saw my need. They were like, what do you need? Yeah. And they were like, you need to have 40 people go past us right now through this park. So
good. See?
It was convenient.
Well, and they needed to crack down on whatever it was that they were cracking down
on.
Sure,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, they've got their own business, and we weren't going to,
we were the errand of
metal.
The TriMet stop.
Yeah. They're like, wait, are these guys going to meddle in with whatever we're doing? No? Okay. Let them go through.
In my defense, it is a bike route.
It was listed as, I don't know. I wonder, is it unlocked during the day then?
It is. They probably lock it at 10 p.m.
Okay.
was what it looked like last time I checked, but yeah. I'll do my homework this year.
Next up from The Guardian, via our friend Scott McAllister Morgan in San Jose. I hope that was right. I kind of guessed. Unmasked, the Mexico City superhero wrestling for pedestrians' rights.
I saw that.
Clogged with traffic, crippled by poor infrastructure. I might argue that second part. The capital is notoriously hard to navigate on foot. Enter Peatonito, the activist fighting for safer streets.
That's what Portland needs.
Yes. Oh, yes.
We need superhero wrestling pedestrian activists.
So here's a picture of him.
I'm all over this.
The blurb I picked out is, since 2012, Mexico City has had a superhero defending its pedestrians. Peatonito, or Pedestrian Man, 3 years after he first appeared on the streets, armed with a highway code and a white aerosol can to spray zebra crossings and pavements where none existed, Peatonito can take pride in the victories that he and his fellow transport right activists have achieved. Together, they fight for safer, more efficient ways for people to get around the capital, which has 5.5 million vehicles in circulation.
That is a ton of people.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a cool picture of him. And he was actually in New York City not too long ago.
You should get him on the show.
I don't think he's in the States anymore. but he had a tweet of him, like, stopping cars in Times Square.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
That person has very steel nerves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
steely nerves.
I don't know. I guess, like, if you're doing it in Mexico City, you know,
you can do it anywhere.
You could probably do it anywhere.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine.
You should look him up on YouTube, though. I was watching a video of him, and he's, like, physically pushing cars. You know, and obviously he's not going to actually move a car, but
they're moving back.
They'll eventually be like, okay, yeah, and shift it into reverse. And
there was another guy down in Mexico recently who, there was a car blocking the bike path, and he got off his bike, and I guess he was a heavy weight lifter or something, but it was one of those smart park cars.
Oh.
And he lifted it up by the back, moved it over 6 feet, and put it back
down. Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah. That was awesome.
And then everybody cheered and continued on their bicycles.
Right on.
Yeah, that's great. Nonviolent, still not going to take it, but
yes, exactly.
Take action. As long as you're not hurting, that's great.
I don't know. So this is something that, like, I'm getting a little philosophical here. Like, I've kind of thrown around is, like, the sort of difference between sort of being, like, kind of completely passive pacifism and then, like, active pacifism, where, like, you know, someone like this is not doing any real violence to anything, but he's certainly, you know, making it known, like, hey, whatever you're doing is incorrect.
Right.
You
know? There's nothing. I'm pretty much a pacifist, but I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, people setting limits, setting parameters, you know, that's, you know, just because I have a fence between my neighbor doesn't mean we're hostile and doesn't mean I want to hurt him.
Right.
We just got a fence. Right.
But in the meantime, you're not just going to be passive and let anybody walk over your rose garden or whatever.
Yeah, whatever I have. No rose garden.
My dandelions.
My weeds are well cultivated.
You want to read this next one, Guthrie?
Sure. From Coin6 News, will changes on Foster Road help or hurt businesses? Foster's high crash corridor and a high rate of fatalities, said PBOT's Dylan Rivera. We're committed to Vision Zero. No one should die in traffic crashes on our streets.
Another quote is, they think we need to make it like Hawthorne and pretty, but it is a transportation corridor, said... I missed some of his name.
Is it ODOT?
No. So this is a guy who owns a business. I'll grab this in a second. Who owns a business on that street by the name of something Tyler. Anyways, he says, yes, it's a transportation corridor. Always was and always should be. So he's got a very different view of the way Foster should operate and the way Clay Tyler, owner of Mount Scott Fuel Company. So I don't know if you've been down Foster recently in the past, like, month and a half or so. I doubt you have.
I have. Not in the month and a half, but probably in the last 3 months.
Okay. So there have been a lot of fluorescent signs going up on businesses recently. Most notably was in that Euro Classic Furniture store. They have tons of windows, and, like, now all the windows are blocked with a lot of, like, signs, you know, saying, like, you know, call the mayor. This is
Save Foster.
Save Foster Road. Yeah, yeah. Stuff like that. And it's, like, popping up all over. And, like, so this Clay Tyler is not just, like, an aberration. I think he's a good representation of something that seems to be going on within the businesses and the business owners. So I don't know. Have you noticed any of these?
What is it in opposition to? Just proposed changes on
the road
on...
diet.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. That.
So what's going to happen is Foster is going to go to two traveling lanes with a turning lane in the middle, and then parking and bike lanes on either side. And this has been passed in, I want to say 2014, was voted in unanimously.
Were businesses included in that vote, or just sort of
I'm
at the city level?
I'm the public process was followed.
Okay, yeah.
I would assume.
Dan
is skeptical.
I'm always skeptical.
That's all right.
And I think I would love to come back and talk about this, but there's some cycling things that I think there needs to be balance on.
Yes.
I don't like empty, never used or virtually never used bike lanes on 122nd and all the places I ride my bike, and then places that really need bike lanes, none.
Don't get them.
Right?
Yes.
That is because there's no market. There's no value. It's done through politics.
Right.
So there's no value. There's no one knows, is this more valuable than that? It's just more. And so, you know, the same classic errors that led to building cross-country rail tracks that went nowhere and were crappy and didn't get used for decades till somebody actually made one that worked. And the same thing that made the super highway system that destroyed our country after World War II, where we decided to copy Nazi Germany's highway system, you know, the guys who lost the war, to the overproductive, massive moving machine of the United States.
But the Autobahn.
Right, right. Which is was not an argument,
fast.
Right? The Autobahn, right? But
sorry, I got a bit glib there.
But the United States was producing and moving material and people at record levels and beat the snot out in the production race of the whole world. We were a machine. And what do? We turned around and copied those that didn't do so well. And it restructured our cities in some very negative ways and did a lot of damage. And so this idea that if you believe something's right, then the gates are open as long as you're following the political procedure, that's got to be wrong.
Is that to say, so like in terms of bike lanes on Foster, is that the belief that bike lanes are right, or is it something else that is at play?
I don't know. I don't know what's at play, but I do know that just saying, well, it followed the political, you know, it followed the procedure, like, oh, well, that means nothing, right?
It means there was a procedure.
Yeah, yeah.
But.
Yeah, right, right. And they followed the procedure for slavery, too. Right? There's a lot of times the government follows procedure, and it's not necessarily good. It's not, it doesn't mean what you're doing is right or not, right? That following procedure just
right or wrong doesn't play into following process.
Right. It's not necessarily the thing that decides. So how do we decide is another question. But when you go to somebody who has employees and capital investment and decades of time there and say, look, what you want doesn't matter. We're going to do this. Times that by everyone there, then you might have another factor involved.
But I mean, I think it's also, I mean, like it's a really gray zone, but I feel like education is such a big component of making changes in neighborhoods.
Right.
And so if you can back it up statistically, but appeal on an emotional level, then that's when you'll see things changing. And so
let me ask you this. When are you wrong? Can you look at any bike lane in Portland and say, that's a wrong investment?
Williams.
Right. But there's a lot of people who see no wrong. Right. They like, it all helps. It's just right. But then we're in the business of picking winners and losers. And we don't know what transit's going to look like 20 years from now.
Sure.
Like we look back 20 years ago and say, oh, look at those idiots. It's the line paradox. Like in a movie line. Right. You get in the movie line and you look at the people in front of you. And you go, look at these idiots. They've been waiting here all this time. I just got here. And then you look behind you and say, I'm ahead of them.
Yeah.
You are at the cool spot, right? Yeah, yeah. And so we look back in time and the people 20, 30 years ago, like, look at them investing in that multi-lane highway over the river. Pfft, what did they know?
Or
and
that bridge across the river
back in 20 years from now, they're going to say, ah, geez, we got too many bike lanes where we don't need them and not enough where we need them, right? They could just as well be saying that.
Yeah, I mean, well, but also with Portland working towards Vision Zero and with the participantship or the participation that they're looking for, like we're at, I think it's hitting into that education level.
But there's no opt out if error.
Yeah.
Right? Vision Zero is an irrational vision.
You don't think there's a.
No, look, I believe in no accident. I want everyone safe. Mm-hmm. But to say there's like, should be zero plane crashes, zero car accidents, so that's not a rational belief. That's not a rational belief.
I think it's
so. You're.
I think it's possible to. I might disagree to some level in that. I think it's possible to, because Vision Zero doesn't say like no fatalities or no accidents, but no preventable fatalities, no preventable accidents. And for example, someone crossing Foster at a flashing light lit. You know, crossing,
right.
Still getting creamed by a car should be preventable. So there's obviously something going on.
It smells
both,
to me.
Both on an engineering level and on a personal level.
That I'll agree with. Something, but
that I think we can prevent something like that from happening.
Right. If capital and space was unlimited, I would be pro everything.
So,
you know what I mean? It's like, if that was unlimited, we wouldn't have any. There would be no discussion. We'd just say, do it.
Right.
Right. But it's not always true. And if you tell businesses, oh, this is.
But is it a question of capital or is it a question of priorities for capital?
Well, either way, it's the same thing. It's where it's getting used.
Okay.
So,
you know.
Well, and there's also a bit of a precedent now for this, which is if you look at the 28 bikeway, which didn't happen for.
Because businesses got together.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's what Foster is going through now. And if you look at 28th Street, it depends on your mode of transportation. If you're a bicyclist, it still sucks. And so. Are you going to say
as a person who drives just a small section between Gleason and Burnside, usually around 3:00 p.m.
No,
As someone in a motorized vehicle in that section, I think it still sucks.
Oh yeah totally. It's not, well, it's like nobody got their cake and nobody got to eat.
Nobody's going to eat anything. But here's what I want. I want a different. I want a discussion that isn't. Like you can be, there has to be some rational edges to the board.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we have to be looking at and saying, well, you know, this is good, but it may be better to invest in this more long term than always.
It reminds me of something you wrote long, long time ago about emotion versus numbers.
Yeah.
And I think it was mostly in response to this is, you know, kind of picking at a really old scab here in response to Joseph Rose's article about, you know, the $1 million driver.
Goofy. Yeah. Oh my God.
And
yes.
Like, you know, okay, your numbers are correct, but the way you're spinning these numbers is totally wrong. You know, and you're using emotion to like, you know,
hype these
things. And, you know, and I will admit on my side, like, I'm really highly invested in like a low car lifestyle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really do believe like it would benefit everybody. And I do get kind of like, I'll admit, kind of a little fascist about it. Like, you know, like everybody needs to stop driving.
The
and
king
like,
of division yeah, has spoken.
That's right. The king of division has spoken. Everybody
I've
go
picked
on
him
car
up on
diet.
Division.
You have.
Not so much a king when he's riding my bus. More of a prince.
That's his it's the chariot. Yeah.
That's right. I forgot all about that. I was going to mention that today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we had... Brock and I had just talked about, like, maybe about a week before I had ridden that bus.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen Dan out driving? I don't think we have. What would I do? I don't know. Should I say hi? And then, like, I was already on the bus and you came on
yeah.
to, like, replace to yeah, yeah, yeah. that driver. And I was like, is that? It is. What's
the proper etiquette? It's always say hi.
That's why. Like, do I yell from the back?
Yeah, hey,
roll easy.
You know what's funny is Brock walked by me and he recognized me, but didn't really recognize. He was like, and I saw this uneasy thing. I think it was a while ago to either email or tweet saying, "I know it was you. I'm sorry. I didn't say anything."
I have that rule. Like, if you
very
think
public
you,
apology,
yeah. yeah.
You should always ask. You never know what you're missing out on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you might make someone's day saying, hey, what's going on? Or I'll kick you off. No.
Well,
would Aaron Flores please come to the front of the bus?
Right.
Attention, Aaron Flores.
I don't know. Did you know? You didn't see me on when you got on, though.
I don't think so, no.
No.
And you had a different bike than the last time I saw you riding a bike, I think.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It's stupid when you know people by bikes. Hey, I know who that guy is.
It's pretty common.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's happened to me a few times.
I know a couple of people I can spot from across the river.
I don't remember you so much. I don't remember your name, but I remember that bike.
It's like a mnemonic device, but for your bicycle preference.
When you see the Huffy 10-speed, you're like, and that's Dan.
And there he goes.
There he goes.
Dan, do you have like a theme in which we should read these credits?
I don't know.
As Guthrie cringes.
Well, I've only like flubbed the last two, so.
Oh.
No, I'll just listen in. I'm curious to see what's going on.
Okay. Many times we've had guests sort of suggest we read our credits in a...
like a pirate voice?
Yeah.
Mm. I think we did British. The last time I was on, it was British.
Well, it has to be pirate.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
Can we do pirate?
Sure.
We'll handsomely there, handsomely.
We'll scrap something together.
Okay. I feel like I should get a different closing theme now. All right. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email terror thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 2503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Brian J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors.
Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot,
Katerina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, and Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weitz, and Doug Cohen Miller.
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, and Andy Bruner.
Dave Knows, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick R. Chain, Sebastian Poole, Marco Lowe,
Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson, and Drew the Welder,
Anna Christus Gukas, John Wasserman, Andre Johnson,
Shelley and Troy, King of Division, and Josh Zeeson.
Richard G. Guthrie Straw sitting right here next to me.
Arr.
And Christopher Barnett. Thank you all. Have a good night and brush your teeth.
Ha!